Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Matthew Shindell, the space historian, curator at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, a really cool job, and the book is really cool. For the Love of Mars, it's about human history and the Martian planet, projections, interpretations, and now science. Matt Descartes died 1650. Christian Huygens, Giovanni Cassini died 1712. Isaac Newton died 1726. These men, Leonhard Euler of all physics, these men put together what we understand to be science following Galileo's groundbreaking martyrdom to what he saw through the telescope. All of this is going on simultaneously with them inheriting the old world. Were they seen as rebellious of the ancients when they provided these interpretations of observation and mathematics?
I think yes and no, right? Galileo didn't see himself necessarily as being rebellious. He thought he was still working in within that same tradition, but trying to modernize it based on, you know, new observations, new mathematics. Now, I don't want to try to get too deep into what Galileo really thought he was doing, but at least this is the way that he would describe it in letters that he wrote to his patrons. And, you know, Galileo's observations of the moon certainly gave people a reason to think that there was something different going on in the heavens than what they had, you know, inherited from Aristotle. And there did seem to be the need for some new ways of thinking about the solar system. But the truth is that there were multiple models of the universe kind of circulating at that time, each kind of not seeming perfect, right? Not being the obvious choice for what was happening. You had the old Aristotelian model or the Ptolemaic model with the Earth at the center. You then had Tycho Brahe's model where you had the Earth at the center, but everything else but the moon orbiting around the sun. And then finally you had this Copernican model, which was great mathematically, but it still didn't really line up perfectly with observation. So, you know, we have this period during what we call the scientific revolution where there's not really an obvious answer. And it's actually a very slow transformation into what we have today that involves, you know, not just the observations that Galileo was making, but new physics of the heavens that Newton contributes, new mathematics that the Oilers contribute. And, you know, eventually that all kind of adds up to something we recognize today as our modern solar system. But, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. The scientific revolution, if we want to still call it that, is a very slow, slow revolution.
Matt mentions Tycho Brahe. He had really good eyesight because he spotted a new star in 1572, this is Matt's reporting, and a comet in 1577 without a telescope. But we come immediately to the 18th century because there's lots of lifting going on now. I think Newton describes the thinking for me always. We give him enormous credit for Newtonian physics, but he spent most of his time in alchemy, searching for manufacturing gold from elements that he could compile, including, I think, apples. So he was a man of two thinkings about the heavens. But in the 18th century, we have men who are doing observation and coming to conclusions about Mars. That is what's striking about this. The Comte de Buffon and the Comte de Laplace, both Frenchmen, can see Mars, can see the planets. What do they make of it? What is their projection, Matt?
Well, I mean, during this period, there's a lot of enlightenment thinking about the solar system and where it came from. And there is this effort, you know, on the part of Buffon and later Laplace to try and imagine a natural cause for the creation of the universe, as opposed to, you know, a divine cause or there being a heavenly creator. And so, you know, what they try to start looking for is how can you apply just natural phenomena to try and understand where things might have come from and how they would have been put into motion so that you have all of these planets orbiting the sun. And, you know, this is really the beginning of starting to think about the planets as having all been created in the same event from natural processes and all of them basically having the same physics and a family relationship to each other, having all come from the same stuff and obeying the same laws. So it's this extension of Galileo's observation and Newton's new physics now being applied to what we might call sort of a natural history of the planets and how they evolve over time.
Martians, Mars, all of a sudden, I was surprised to see it comes out of the Herschels. William and Caroline Herschel, they're tracking nebulae, which we now understand to be galaxies. They didn't understand that at the time. That won't be till the 20th century. But the Herschels believed that Mars, do I have this correct, was inhabited and it had an atmosphere, it had citizens, and we're observing it with telescopes. Is that correct?
They weren't doing very much direct observation of Mars, but you know, the Herschels did have this idea that, you know, that planets were born as a normal process of the evolution of a star, that stars were born, they developed planets, and then eventually that star died and the whole process started over again. And Herschel did conclude, William Herschel, based on what other astronomers had reported and maybe a few of his own observations, that that Mars was probably incredibly Earth-like, maybe the most Earth-like planet in the solar system, and likely did have life forms very much like what we have on Earth. I'm not sure how far he went in terms of whether those were intelligent civilizations, but he definitely thought that Mars wouldn't be too different from Earth. I mean, he thought that all planets were probably inhabited because, you know, that was actually a pretty common belief throughout the Enlightenment, that why would God create a planet if it wasn't going to be inhabited by some form of life? Why waste that space? And so, yeah, Herschel was pretty convinced that even stars might have some forms of life on them.
The man Robert Chambers, Matt takes me to places where I've never been. Robert Chambers, he calls him modern Dante, died 1871. He writes a book called Vestiges, which appears from your telling, I've not read the book or seen it even in physical form, to be a projection of the world he lives in on the heavens. Is that how to read this? Almost as if a dystopian romance.
Yeah, I mean, historians of biology usually read Chambers' Vestiges of the History of Natural Creation, and they read it because it comes out, you know, not long before Darwin published his On the Origin of Species. And it's kind of seen as this moment when evolution becomes part of the discourse and becomes this intellectual object that folks argue over publicly. And it kind of lays the groundwork for Darwin's argument to emerge. But if you read it more broadly, it's really this history of an attempt to extend that argument about the natural history of the universe and to really talk about how things could go from nothing to everything, essentially, you know, to this incredible solar system with all of these planets and life maybe here, maybe everywhere. You know, what Chambers is trying to do is just tell a complete evolutionary story of essentially everything.
And we now move to Mars in specific. A man named Richard Proctor writes a book called Other Worlds and Ours. And then the very important Giovanni Schiaparelli, died 1910, observes the canals of Mars. What it feels like, Matt, as an amateur reader, is that we've gone from the ancients, who did not see Mars as a physical world, but saw it as an expression to be interpreted along with everything else in the heavens, to the specific need of Mars to be just like us, except alien, possibly a competitor. And Schiaparelli doesn't go that far. He just observes canals. I think as a child, that's the first I knew of Mars. It had canals. Mm-hmm. Do you remember hearing the first time about Mars, Matt?
Oh, well, you know, I was born in 1976. I like to point that out because that's the same year that the Viking landers landed on the surface of Mars. So the Mars that I've grown up with has pretty much always been a land of rock that looks a lot like, you know, the American Southwest, but that is, you know, essentially a frozen desert landscape. So canals, I didn't learn about canals on Mars until later in life when I, you know, read some of the work of Edgar Rice Burroughs, right? His Barzum novels. That was the first that I saw canals. So I didn't really grow up with those in my sort of imagination.
Well, I mentioned that before the success of the NASA probe programs, those of us born in the 1940s and before, which pretty much describes the young and old senior leadership at NASA in the 20th century.
It was
Edgar Rice Burroughs and the canals of Mars and the princess of Mars. That's how we saw it. It was magical. And that's all about Schiaparelli. So let's go back to another influencer of us in the late 20th century, Percival Lowell. I'd always associated Lowell with breakthroughs in science. He had an imagination.
Yeah, he certainly did. And you know, we talk about him today as an astronomer who built an observatory in Flagstaff. And, you know, some people treat him a little bit as an embarrassment to astronomy, others as a great patron and a great scientist. But in fact, he did have an imagination. In fact, he was a travel writer before he became an astronomer. And he was very interested throughout his whole life in this idea of the evolution of the planets and that there was this relationship between Earth and Mars. And what he saw through the telescope when he looked at Mars wasn't just canals. What he saw was, you know, a possible future for life on Earth, because Mars had just sort of aged more quickly, essentially because of its size. And what we were looking at there was what we were going to eventually be looking at on Earth, which is that the deserts that already populated the Earth were going to get larger, and the Earth was going to become more characterized by desert landscapes over time. And so, you know, Lowell was looking at Mars, but he was also looking at the future, you know, in his mind.
Yes, again, it's that projection about could that be our future? Of course, H.G. Wells did that magnificently by creating monsters who pretty much, as you observe ironically, reproduce the destruction power of the British Empire in the 19th century.
H.G. Wells was one of the first writers to really think about Martians as not just sort of altered versions of humans who would have the same thoughts and the same dreams, but as something completely alien and Martian. And when they came to Earth in War of the Worlds, they barely even recognized the intelligent life of Earth. They came just for the resources. And H.G. Wells is basically saying in that book to his fellow members of the British Empire, this is essentially what we do when we go out into the world. And how does it feel to think about this being done to us? So it was, on the one hand, a great science fiction book in that it took astronomy seriously and the idea of life on another world very seriously. But then it was also a great satire through which he could hold up the kind of the ugliness of the British Empire to his readers.
Matt Shindell is the author. For the Love of Mars is the book, A Human History of the Red Planet. The robots are coming. I'm John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your Social Security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabe sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slip covers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slip covers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.